Okay. We'll call the September 1, 2020 Finance Committee meeting to order. Item two, comments from the public. You can do it now or as we go through individual agenda items. Any comments at the moment? Okay, move on. Tom, item three, dual signatures.
Yes, sir, and thank you. So it's come up recently that when we have checks signed for paying our regular bills, historically, one or two or three of the board of directors are authorized signers. And so every 2 weeks when we pay our vendors, it turns out we have to sign anywhere from 50 to 80 checks. And recently the question was, why are we signing all these checks? Are we really mandated to have real signatures? And the answer is no, we are not. Our checks have two lines on them, so they can handle dual signatures. However, every month at the board meeting, we produce a detailed list of all the checks that are written. So if anybody's looking to see how we spend money and what we're spending on, they can go to the bills paid memo every month and track it that way. So at the request of the director, I asked Mamie Chatinsky to put together a list of how many checks are written. And so far this year that we've written 345 checks. Can you go down a little bit, Amelia? So it's a very simple chart. So 226 of the 345 checks, or 66%, were for items underneath $5,000. And I believe that should say probably zero to 5,000. And then 49 checks between 5 and 10, 38 and 32. At first I considered, why don't we just do everything, the suggestion be everything over 25,000 be signed by the director, a dual signature. But I thought a baby step would be to start at $10,000. And so at the end of the year, the director will probably have to come in and sign between 6 and 8 checks per month for amounts larger than $10,000. And so that's this item, and I'm ready to answer questions. I think what we would do is take it to the board as a new practice.
Yeah, this is John. I was the one that I hadn't signed checks in quite a while, and while I was doing it, it occurred to me that it didn't make any sense on these, especially on these $1,000 to $5,000 checks, that they have to go hunt somebody down, put all the documentation behind them and do all these things that we have to do so one of us can be found and come in and sign them. The stuff shows up in a check register. All this stuff is public record. A lot of it's in the board packet. I just think it's redundant. And unless somebody has a problem with it, I'm just going to recommend we take it to the board and ultimately approve it. I agree to start. I think up to 10,000 is a good place, and that kills off the majority of them.
John, this is Tim. I concur. I think what it does is it makes staff more efficient in just the process. We have multiple layers at staff level, and then again, every month we have in the consent calendar, the bills being paid. My goal would be to get to that 25,000, because that's what we've authorized the general manager to. So I agree with Tom, probably by the end of the year, we'll see that there aren't any issues with that 10 to 25. And then for the calendar year, we could probably start that 25 and over. And it just really streamlines for staff not having to be dependent on a knucklehead like myself to schedule to get in and sign the checks.
So I it sounds like we concur, Tim and I, Tom, that we just move this forward to the board for approval.
Yes, then thank you. We'll come up with a board agenda item and narrate it to match what Tim's comments were. My suggestion is that we we outline it as a period of from now to the end of the year, the 10,000, and that it starting in January without any occurrences of questions or concerns, we just automatically up to 25,000.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yes.
Nothing else on that. We'll move on. Item four, Ranch Murrieta Golf Course and Ranch Murrieta Properties LLC Security and Drainage Tax Appeal. You want to start this, Tom?
Yes, I have. We did a bunch of work. We went back in time, tried to pull it together, all the documents we could find. And if anybody was on the meeting at the improvement meeting this morning, you realize that Central Murrieta is a series of documents beginning in the 70s. And if you don't have them all, you're going to find the one that makes you turn in a different direction. So we did everything we could to do discovery on this request. And we made some preliminary draft assumptions or statements of this is how much we know. And we put that whole package together. It was about 80 pages. And we gave each of the appellants, Rancho Maria Properties and the golf course, the whole packet. I sat down with each of the gentlemen, Mr. Martel and Mr. Sullivan, and walked through what we had and said, and basically I said, this is all we can find. And if that's all we can find, this is what we think the answer is. And I said, so go do your own due diligence, come back to me and either show up with that smoking gun, so to speak, very appropriate out here at Rancho, that says, nope, here it is, that said the rates should have been less here and then more here, or more and then less. And I gave that to them 2 weeks ago, and I still don't have an answer back. Hopefully by the meeting I might have an answer, but I'm guessing this is going to go into October. And I'll entertain any questions. I see John's on the call, but he hasn't raised his hand. So I'm guessing they're still doing their research. So we're being reactive to their requests, and we're working through it.
I've raised my hand.
Speak, John.
So yes, we appreciate all the work that staff did to get the best detailed information from their archives. Yes, we have met. We do not have a satisfactory answer from the district as to 2008, 2009, when the district apparently, without authorization of changing Measure J, bumped the rates by 30% for undeveloped land, 24% for the village, 28% for unmetered lots, and 14% for metered lots in violation of the ordinance, limiting the adjustment each year to 2%. We were satisfied, and we don't want it. It doesn't affect us in any financial way currently, but we were given a lot of documents having to do with the period when the ordinance was originally adopted, when Measure J was originally put on the ballot, and what the ordinance were, and the 2004-2005 adjustment that was basically 12% or 11%, depending on what category that was, prescribed in a legal settlement and described in a legal settlement and a legal settlement memorandum that rates had to be adjusted based on PTF, the CSD special tax adjustment memo executive summary that we were given based on starting in February of 98. We're fine till we get to 2008 and 2009. The explanation of the special tax adjustments for 2008, 2009 indicate that the rates in all categories increased by 28 to 38% based on ordinance due to changes in required expansion of security services, a 12% increase in security budget, including staffing and vehicle costs, and the impact of current recession on tax revenues. Unfortunately, the ordinance is based on the election that limited the adjustment each year to 2% cumulative. And if you take the prior year's numbers that's on the security rate history sheet that we were given by staff, there's no justification for that amount of adjustment. And from there, we extrapolate all the way out to today, based on what the ordinance was at the beginning, or based on what it was after the 12% adjustment because of the settlement of the legal issues. Either way, the district is overbilling every category of customer, and particularly the undeveloped property, which we have the most of. Our calculation is that the district has overcharged just in the last 4 years. You've overcharged us $167,000. Now, the general residents of the community have the same situation. They are being overbilled based on the ordinance as well.
Thank you very much for your comments. That is
Don, this is Tom Hennig. Can I respond to that?
Absolutely.
So, again, we've been working this problem consistently over the last 2.5 months. The ordinance Measure J listed a base year rate. For instance, the base year for undeveloped property per acre was $16.59. And per the ordinance, that rate's allowed to be increased by 2% per year. Okay. The initial charge, so in 1998-99 through 2000-2004, the initial charge for undeveloped property was 13.19, and it remained in that same charge rate for the 6 years, 7 years. Now, so the first year, Measure J allowed for $16.59 per acre to be charged, and we charged $13.19. And by the time we finally raised the rates in 2005-2006, that 2% per year was $19.06, and we charged $15.51. And somewhere along the way, and we're still digging in, we're going to find it, there was a realization that the amount of tax collected was not actually meeting the full cost of the budget. And so rather than not bill the full amount that's allowed by law under Measure J, which is the base rate plus 2% per year, we were charging less. And around 2008, they made an adjustment, a big increase to match the legal allowed amount of $20.22. Today, if you take the base year of $16.59 and you add 2% to it every year, you get exactly the charge we're charging monthly this year, $25.55. And if you go over to the Murrieta Village, the unmetered lots, and the residential metered lots, the story's the same. Up until about 6 or 8 years ago, the district was not charging the full amount allowed by law for these taxes. And about 6 or 8 years ago, district management, they saw that security was actually costing receiving in revenue. And so made the adjustment to be the maximum allowed by law. And only a couple exceptions were the rates not increased. In fact, only one exception since 2010 where they not increased. So it's not that we're overcharging, we're charging exactly the amount that the voters approved in 1997, I believe, or 98. And if you want, John, I can bring the spreadsheet over and sit down with you and walk
you. No, what I really want to do is I want you to explain that you are aware that there was a lawsuit and a settlement that reduced those charges to open undeveloped residential land, and that there was a settlement that reset those and they were reduced.
Don't know who that is.
Anyway, so that settlement that adjusted those rates down then said you could jump the rate by 10% within the 2%, not 10% and then go back onto the rate structure that you had. You had to go use that adjustment and then the 10%, and then you were allowed to increase within the 2% of the ordinance, which is the measure. That's what it says in the settlement. And so when you do that, you come up with about $4.65 thereabouts on, and $4 on other properties that are being overcharged. Now, if there was not an adjustment, and I only, you know, reviewed the items that had to do with the metered lots and the undeveloped residential, and I'm happy to sit down with you and go over that, or sit down with, somebody who looks at the settlement, which I had Dick Brandt look at the settlement, and Dick Brandt said, you're absolutely right. That's the cap. And so, I mean, he was involved in the beginning, and he was involved in the lawsuit, and he told me that reset then put a cap on the adjustment at 10% within the 2%. That's what the settlement says. Not what I'm saying. That's what the settlement says. So I'm happy to sit down and let's go over that again and see what that brings.
But I want to be crystal clear. According to the work we've done, not once has the district charged more than we're legally allowed to under Proposition J for security fees. We've charged a lot less than we were legally allowed, but we never in any single year exceeded the legal limit, which was approved by all the voters and not just the parties to whatever settlement agreement there may have been. So yes, let's sit down, but I want to be clear in public that the rates have never exceeded the Measure J approved amount on a year-to-year basis.
Just to add on to that too, I mean, in this research, I specifically went back and talked to two of the former general managers and to members of the board in that 2008-2009 period that John is referring to. We also had a discussion with Dick about the settlement. We have read the settlement agreement. We understand the settlement agreement. So I think it's like Tom suggests, we can get back together on this one more time. If we both have a position on it, I think at that point it will be on us to prepare a letter to answer your request, which we will do. And, you know, it'll be our position and we'll kind of go from there. But it's, the amount of research that Tom just reiterated to you in 5 minutes took about 2 months to complete. But I've been in the process since we started, and I concur that it's accurate.
Okay, if there's nothing else.
Tom, this is Tim. Obviously, our legal counsel has reviewed the settlement.
We have not shared this with our legal counsel, all the work we've been doing. We were waiting for the response back from Mr. Martell and Mr. Sullivan. Like I said, to see if there was a document out there that we don't know about. And it appears there is not.
So okay, then I would say we would do our next step in our process. And John, obviously jump in, but we now have all of our documents, understanding the history of it. I would think we would move it to our legal counsel for confirmation. And then if we're not hearing anything in between or during that process, then whatever the legal counsel comes back, that might be the direction that staff recommends that the board take.
Yeah, I fully understand it, but I do think it is important for that settlement agreement to be looked at carefully, because I think from my perspective, it's pretty clear, and it isn't a makeup. You don't get to make it up. So that's my position, and I'm happy to have a Zoom call with everybody to pull those documents up and talk about whether the words say what the authors meant in the settlement. But it's clear to me that the credits to reduce the charges to the undeveloped land were not supposed to be recoverable back to the base year, because it was clear right at the beginning when the lawsuit got dropped on the district that it took maybe 3 years for it finally get to a settlement.
Yeah, and that particular settlement invalidated, or I think closed out the first lawsuit. I think it said the lawsuit is no longer active or valid or something like that. But we can look at it. I mean, now that we've zeroed in on the actual documents, then it's definitely something that needs to be reviewed with Dick Shanahan and get the legal opinion on what people were thinking and what they signed and what's allowable under a Measure J tax vote versus, you know, 8 years later or 3 years later after the voters made their case. So yeah, I'll sit down with you, John. I'll show you what I got. Then we'll put something together for Dick. I'll put something together for Dick Shanahan.
Just one
last.
That would
be great.
Yeah, one last comment too, just based on the start of this conversation this morning. In the settlement agreement too, I think we agree that is dealing specifically with undeveloped land and the impact of the FDIC and lots that weren't on board yet that were coming on board and all that other stuff. But just to reiterate back to the people listening in on the call, like Tom reiterated, especially as it relates to residential property within the gates, for example, those rates are correct. Okay, we can move on. Security staffing and update. Tom, do you want to start that, please?
Yes, I just wanted to let the board or the committee know that we are about to have 3 vacancies in our security patrol positions. And this has kind of happened all of a sudden. We had one officer retire out a while ago or take another job. And at that point in time, I did some restructuring of the schedule to have our security chief and our security sergeant begin taking regular patrol shifts like has been in the past. It's been the case in the past that the chief and the sergeant had pretty much, they were on patrol when they were here. And for some reason we got away from that. So when we had the one vacancy, I said, well, you know, let's schedule you guys in and start having regular patrol shifts to where there's not 2 or even 3 people on the payroll at a time for security patrol. And then we had, about a month ago, much to our surprise, we thought it might happen, but it actually happened. Brandon Areno has left, and he's taken a nice job in Louisiana. He's going to be a correctional officer. And then last week, we got notice from one of our three patrol officers. They had talked about going in November, but they decided September 11th, next Friday, is going to be their last day, a week from Friday. So now we have three vacancies out of five. And so what I wanted to say, it takes us a while to hire a full-time equivalent patrol officer, and the recruitment's always been difficult. So what I've chosen to do for now is we're going to use the same company we use for part-time gate assistants, PDF, security services, and we're going to bring in a supplemental person to help us with patrol while we work through some of the issues with security. And I know this could be a really long discussion, and I think everybody on the line knows that the security budget is a major concern right now because of how it clearly is costing the district far more than we're receiving in taxes. And so I just wanted to kind of let the committee know that that's how we're doing staffing right now. We have we're fully staffed at our gate officer position. No, we have one vacancy in the gate officers, but now three in patrol. So we're going to supplement that with contract security services for the time being. And I just want to field any questions, and maybe this can be a good chance to have some additional discussions on the type of a future we have for security, focusing mostly on patrol. So that's my report. That's my discussion.
So I guess, and I think Tim's made this point in the past, this puts us more in a sooner rather than later position as to really deciding what the roadmap is for fixing this, because if you have all of these vacancies and we're contemplating, and I'm speaking specifically like you were to patrol, it's really going to be difficult for us to commit to full-time hires if we're going to consider a broad menu of choices about what we're going to do going forward. I don't know how long we can drag out this discussion without making a commitment really to just continuing to hire contract patrol officers.
John, this is Tim. I don't disagree, and I would echo those sentiments. I think as we move forward, Tom's bringing up the issue of the fiscal issues here to the Finance Committee over on the Security Committee. It's going to be about the same as we put our documents together and look at where we're at today, because where we're at today is very different than where we were just a couple months ago in this process. And so to that extent, I think you're right. It's going to be sooner than later. And I know we've reached out to RMA, and we're going to reach out to the other stakeholders once we get a better grasp of what are the options, what are the timelines, and what fiscally comes in with the options that we have available to us. So the important thing here is this is not unusual. The amount of temporary folks might be a little bit higher, but in years past, we've contracted out for both patrol and gate services is normally where we do it. Now, obviously, there is some cost savings just because we're not paying full-time benefits, et cetera, but we have to run all those numbers and look at those items as well as all the other security issues that are coming into play.
I think part of this may be at the board level is is trying to understand, and I understand that we all this information gathering and public input and RMA contact is going to have to take place, but I'm wondering if we don't set an endpoint for this, and that endpoint being, as far as I can tell through this process so far, a referendum or a vote of the ratepayers. If we don't hang our hat on a date that we're going to complete this, we're going to wallow around and it's going to take a long time. So that's, in my mind, that's the first priority. Is we understand financially there's not a lot more data we can gather, believe me. I've been involved with it with Tom from the very beginning and Michelle. We understand completely what the problem is. I think some of that financial data really ought to come to the board at the next meeting, so they're sharing what we know at this point. And based on what I'm seeing, I don't see any restructuring that we do that doesn't require a referendum or a vote, unless we are going to commit to working within the existing budget constraints. And if we're going to do that, then I think we need to be prepared to tell the community that there's going to be a pretty significant impact on services if we go that route. I hope that makes sense, but I think that's a discussion we have to have one level up, so we're all on the same page here.
John, I would agree with you. That's some of the conversation that the general manager and myself have had, that we just have to get this data, get the process, the history, where we're at. I think we'll have that ready for this upcoming board meeting. And then as you said, and I know that another director has echoed this as well, that you know, there's an endpoint for input, and a decision has to be made on direction to go. And if it's a referendum, if it's to live within the current budget constraints, et cetera, then there it is. But I think we're, from the security side, we're working that direction as well, because what we're going to have to do is match up this fiscal data to what does it look like on the security side? And then purely what are the menu options that are available to us that A, stay within the fiscal constraints, or this is what it is, then here's the cost of it, and we need to send that to the referendum, and our customers will tell us yes or no from that standpoint. So dual track, I think you're right. We've got the numbers. We can make some projections out. Security, we've got to look at some of the options and then match them up. I guess the question I have for Tom would be, I know that we would have the fiscal side ready for the board meeting. Would we have some of the options side of security, do you think, ready for this upcoming board meeting?
I'm thinking that we need to, and to answer your question, Tim, yes, and I think so, but I don't want to commit to it. So yes, we can come up with the state of security discussion, outlining the fact, and this is why I wanted to focus on the staffing part, of the changes we've made to the staffing over the past 2 or 3 months and what that might look like on a year-end budget picture or maybe mid-year budget picture. Because if we're paying basically three positions, and we're supplementing those contract staff, and furthermore, we're taking our higher cost admin staff and putting them back on the road. And this isn't anything new, that over the years, the security chief was a regular face in throughout the district. on a Monday through Friday and on an event basis. So again, I don't know why we got away from that, but that's what I wanted to come to this. And then so I can come up with something as far as what this might look like to year end, but it's certainly not going to eat up, you know, the $400,000+ deficit in the security budget, but it's going to take a bite out of it.
No. I think that's totally appropriate, Tom. So John, why don't we do this? Why don't we for sure have staff get us a report on the finances to bring to the board specific to security. And then out of security's meeting tomorrow, we may or may not have a full process developed, but we can have at least a draft that goes to the board, and we can have a little bit of discussion from that standpoint. Would that work for you?
Yeah, I think so. One of the things I just wanted to touch on, and we've used the word menu. What I kind of had been thinking about was exactly that, listing various, and I came up with 11 of them, things that would be put on the table for discussion. You know, I've said it twice already that I'm not advocating for any of these, but just as an example, I mean, we have two sections of the community, one of which is behind gates and one of which is not. We collect now about $185,000-$190,000 in security taxes outside the gate. I mean, I realistically think it's potentially better for them and cheaper for us if we consider a different structure for security for that side of the Jackson Highway. I'm not saying it's a good idea yet. It needs more. And that's the kind of thing I want to explore. I want discussion about RMA and their ability to do some of this with compliance officers, probably at half the cost that we can. I want to discuss the potential of a blended police presence, and we've done this in the past where we hired on a part-time basis off-duty sheriffs to supplement our security services. We costed some of that, and the costs, believe it or not, when you throw our fringe in, is not a lot far off from what we pay for an SSD guy with a car. A lot of this stuff I think we could collaborate with these other entities on, the club, the commercial area, the airport. And I'd like to do that before we put this blended proposal together, because and then take what we have out for public input. I think if you do the public input up front, and I think I've seen four of these as long as I've lived here, it starts at the lowest common denominator and kind of stays there. We start with guns or no guns and police powers or no police powers, and we never seem to get above that. So I was hoping we could come up with a structure that would work for us, where we have these conversations with these entities, because I think because we have the latent power, I really think ultimately it's up for us after we take all this input, public and stakeholder, to put a plan together. Once we put the plan together, then we can really cost it. And we can put that to a vote in a referendum or some other way. And there is potential of doing it in another way. And the alternative to that will be the status quo. And if we're told by the voters that we're supposed to adhere to the budget and do status quo, we've been told essentially one way or the other what it is the public wants us to do. So that's kind of where I've been coming from on this. And I'm, you know, I was just looking to see if we could put some structure to the process and then come up with a fixed date at the end so we can get on with this and move on to some other stuff.
I think the answer is definitely yes. We can pick a date. I think with what Tom was talking about, getting something prepared for the board meeting this month, just a couple of weeks, that'll get us into a timeline. And then the other will be just as we meet with the stakeholders and the public on some of those options, because I agree with you. I think we need to figure what is really realistic as potential. And part of it is what the measure calls for and what does that mean? And currently we're meeting that intent wholeheartedly, but it appears we're not doing it wholeheartedly because it's costing more. So I think everything you've talked about, we're on the same page over on the security side, the security committee. I'll know a little bit more tomorrow, but Tom, if you can commit to, we'll have the fiscal items, just this background, everything John talked about. And then on the security side, we might have a draft to look at for board input, and knowing that we're going to be moving forward, meeting with some immediate stakeholders, and then the public.
Yeah, I can agree. I have no problem agreeing to that, Tim. I think we can throw sort of a, here's where we are today, and this is where we find ourselves, given that we've had some people leave the agency, and this is what we've done to solve that problem in the interim. And if the interim is going to be standard for a few months, what might this look like? What might this look like at the end of December? So I think that's very feasible. We can kind of dovetail it in with what goes on at the security meeting on Thursday, or we can have it be a separate item, but clearly we can do a deep dive into the budget of security and project where we might find ourselves in the end of December or sooner.
Perfect. I'm good with that, if you are, John.
Yeah, I am. One last comment that I'd like at least to talk about a little bit at the board meeting to make sure that all five of us are in agreement on how we would proceed with this. We've talked about segregating out the gates versus patrol. Gates is 75% of what we spend on an annual basis. They have not changed in staffing since the 1990s. I think they work pretty well. I think the public is generally satisfied with what the gates provide for the community. So maybe this is a discussion that the gates are sacrosanct or status quo, and we're dealing with the other 25% of the budget. And I don't want to make that decision for anybody else, but I'd like to see us at least discuss that a little bit at the board level, just to make sure that that's where everybody wants us to go.
Can I raise my hand?
I do actually, President. Maybe I have one hand raised, and it sounds like Mr. Sullivan would like to make a comment as well. Thank you, John. I have two hands raised.
Who, just pick one to go first.
Mr. Public, you've had your hand up longest.
Hi, I just want to make two quick comments. I'd like to thank Tom for the update. I mean, as a resident, answers some questions that I've had in the back of my mind, and I appreciate that. I also appreciate the comments that John Merchant said. It gives me a lot more confidence in what you guys are doing. I don't know how it ended up, but I'm a little more comfortable with it than I was before. And so thank you for those two things.
You're welcome.
John, go ahead.
Thank you. I went, you know, going back into my archives, and I've gone into the district's archives. John, I think when you said that the gate is status quo, back in the budget that was approved in May of 16 for the 16-17 year, which is, you know, only 4 years ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
The gate was 489,000 budgeted. The security patrol was 447,000 budgeted. And the security chief and his admin was an additional 89,000. The amount of money that was directed from the general fund was 118,000. So in 4 years, we've gone from 118,000 to allocating tax money and what, another $400,000 worth of deficit for the department versus what comes in from the tax.
Right, that's the number. However, yeah. What you're seeing there is that study we did to reallocate the admin overhead traditionally, and going back all the way beyond 2004, we were picking a number. We were picking 20% or 21.4%. And we were using that number as a basis for allocating overhead into security. We did a consultant study with a consultant that does this for a living, and we wound up with a 31.9% allocation, and that's what tipped this thing over the rails. I mean, you took $1,439,000 and immediately escalated it to $1,986,000, and what I asked Michelle to do was, I just as a test, I said, go back and start with that 21.4% back in 2004, 2005. And if you were to take, rather than using that arbitrary number, I said, build in a divide the years by the increases to get to 31.9 and add that into each individual year. So that, in other words, assuming that maybe the overhead would have gone up systematically and slightly every year from 2004 up to 2020. And when you do that and you build that into what we used as the existing budget, we've been off the rails for 12 years, 14 years, who knows how long. But this whole thing is stimulated by this, really by this overhead that that hasn't been right for since 2004. So when you put the costs where they really belong, this is the number you come up with, and this is what we need to deal with. I mean, this is really what set it off when you started all of a sudden looking at a $2 million number to finance the security department.
Well, John,
go ahead.
My concern, John, is that setting aside the what the rates are, the district isn't compliant with Prop 218 because it's not allocating the services based on what the various ratepayers pay. And what you get into the minute you start deviating from what the tax revenue is you get what we've heard the last couple months is that you're stealing from other revenue sources, and you can describe those any way you want to subsidize security and not stick within what the intent of the voters was, which was 2% maximum adjustment to the base level, which was stepped up significantly. The base year was stepped up significantly from the year before when they sent it out to vote. If you go back to before the vote and you look at how the security charges were allocated by the board in the previous year to when they had to go to, when they went to Measure J, and you look at how they allocated all the various categories, you'd be shocked.
No, I wouldn't be, because I have the numbers.
So I'm saying. You know, I know it's very difficult, and there's a lot of politics associated with what the directors say and what everybody's intention is. I think we got to look at exactly what you said. If it turns out that the non-residential area ends up having its own contract security. My polling of the people here on this side of the road is that they would be in favor of that. They think they can direct the security where it's needed, when it's needed, because they know what they're doing, as you know, as to the events and the airport and the commercial and, you know, all of the stuff. Because now there's some money that comes in from this side of the road, other than just, you know, bare land. There's now, you know, a revenue stream over here, and now it's time to look at it a little bit differently. I mean, in the old days when Bubba Olson packed around his gun over here, nobody messed with what was going on this side of the road. So at the end of the day, let's look at all the options is what I'm saying. If it turns out that we contract a portion of it and we have gates that are district employees, I think that's a direction that people would encourage if they knew they could get the level of service that would make them comfortable.
Right. I agree. That's where we're trying to go. And again, I'm continuing to make the point. I think it's important. And I know I'm trying to do this personally. I want to put all this stuff on the table, at least at the first pass, and not advocate for anything. I mean, I want to see what all the options are. And from that menu, build something that, you know, hopefully will work and will satisfy the majority of people. One of the problems with public input through the years on security is if you bring 10 people to that meeting, you get 10 different answers. So we're going to have to do the best we can with a blended concept that hopefully can satisfy more people than it doesn't. Because no matter what we do, believe me, we're not going to satisfy everybody. It's just the way it is. Okay, any more on this one? Tim, anything?
No, I'm good. I understand the discussions and the comments. I'm good.
Okay. Tom, is COVID the shoe?
Yes, and at this point in time, I forget who was going to talk about it, Amelia or I. So unless she pops in, I'll talk about it.
I'll pop in. I just have a few numbers really quick for a very brief update on COVID expenses. Since we talked last month, we've spent an additional $2,681, which represents about $1,400 in equipment and $1,262 in extra time that staff has spent dedicated to COVID, taking care of COVID.
I'm happy to say we have no new COVID instances since we last spoke.
Congratulations.
It's good. I truly believe that, if people come into the office to do slight stuff, we don't hold meetings here. Although we did hold a training here last week for de-escalation for our security staff and all of our staff, but we did it in a very big room with less than 10 people in each class. And we just needed to get through that training. We're just dealing with the public like we do. But we wear our masks all the time. Our offices are getting wiped down, the doors and stuff, 3 times a day. So I think that's really made an impact across the district staff to see this is the precedent we're setting in the main office. And I think it's paying off. But you never know, one instance and everything changes. So does that cover it, Amelia?
That covers it. Thank you very much.
Yeah, so far, 27 employee sick days due to COVID. And, you know, I think a couple of those days might be because you don't have any other choice, too. So, okay, we're done with that one.
You want to move okay. On? Item 7, award for professional auditing services. We're either going to change our auditor or give our existing auditor an award. Why don't you clarify that for us?
Well, we want to award a contract, and I have a letter. So Larry Bain, who did a really great job, and I really got to applaud, I'm not going to give him an award, but I'm going to applaud for him. He worked with us through a very difficult audit this past year, what with COVID and all, and it was a year in which we had, I think, four different controllers working in the books, and we managed to pass the audit without any findings, any significant findings. There were some suggestions, but Larry had been with the district for probably 10, 11 years. And it really is good financial practice to change firms every few years. The Governmental Financial Officers Association recommends changing auditors at least every 5 years. So we put an RFP out in August, early August. And it's kind of, if you're in the audit world, it's kind of late in the season to be, you know, applying to get, filling out requests for proposals. Most of them get done in June and May and June, and everything's all settled up. But we put ours out in August. We got 8 respondents. Five firms met our requirements, and that included what time they turned in their quote and what they included in the quote or versus what they sent to Amelia. And so we have 5 RFPs being reviewed and ranked by finance staff this week. And we hope to have the scoring completed on the proposals by Wednesday, by tomorrow. And then we open up the price sheets, and then we put the two together, and we take a look at price versus their scoring. And we think that we'll make an initial selection by the end of this week. And then we'll probably check the references on the top 2 firms, which will give us the opportunity to come to the board if you guys agree with the recommendation on September 16th. If you want us to come back to committee, we can, but it means our award's probably gonna be held off until October, which we'd like to give the firm a chance to get started before then. So we're not coming to the board with the fiscal year audit in May or June. We'd much rather come to the board in June, January or February. So we budgeted for $25,000. One company turned in their cost proposal with their plan, which was against what our requirements were. So I was able to look at that price, and I think we're well within our budget. I think the quotes will come in within our budget. So what I'm asking is that we can make our selection and then bring to the board that selection and bypassing next month's committee meeting and going to the board this in September 16th. Any discussion? Any questions?
I don't have any problem with that, Tom. Tim?
No, I would concur. There's no reason to come back to committee. This is a standardized RFP process and also the review and award process. So to make us a little bit more efficient, no reason to have to come to us. And I would say you bring a staff recommendation as a action item, and we'll discuss it, and the board can make action at the meeting.
Tim or John, would you guys want us to have the winning auditor do a little Zoom presentation, a 5-minute presentation on what they intend to do, or?
No, this is Tim speaking. I don't think that's necessary. I think staff's level of due diligence would be enough for myself. I think that as we start going through the audit process, we'll be getting updates from staff. So that would meet my intent, but that's just my thought. So again, I'm wide open. So John, whatever.
No, I'm fine. I'm fine with that, with what Tim said. I don't think we need to meet him at this point. We will as we go through the process.
Okay, thank you.
Any more on the audit? Then we're down to director comments and staff comments. Any? Tim, do you have any comments?
The only thing, again, thank you to staff. I think the GM mentioned it best in that RFP process. We had multiple controllers working through it to get to where we're at. We have a completely different understanding, a better understanding of where we are fiscally. That comes from a lot of dedicated work at all levels of the administrative staff. And so for that, I say thank you on behalf as a board member and what the public doesn't see and getting the day-to-day stuff in a more professional manner done. So to that end, thank you. And I'm good.
The only thing I have is to thank particularly the accounting folks for all of this forensic work that we've been going through for about the last 6 weeks. I mean, it really has been an arduous task, and I appreciate everything that they've done and the speed at which they have operated. Any of the staff have any comments?
Yes, this is Tom. I do. I want to welcome back very happily Cindy Chow to our team. She showed up yesterday with a bunch of baby pictures and a big smile on her face. So Cindy's very valuable to us, and I want to, you know, welcome her. And I also want to thank Michelle Ammon for the amount of work that she has been doing in Cindy's absence. We intend to keep Michelle around for a little bit more time so she can sort out the various items that we've been talking about related to the CIA ditch and some of the developer work we do, because the stuff is real complicated and she's got a forensic background. So I think it's going to be helpful to have her involved. She's proven herself with the work she's done with John on the security stuff. And then Cindy will definitely be valuable as she gets back into gear doing her work. How are you feeling, Cindy? Are you happy to be back?
Yeah, I'm very happy. Thank you.
Yeah, that was short and sweet. that's all I've got, unless Paul or anybody else has something to say.
Nope, no comments. Good.
Okay, if that is the case, then we're adjourned. Thank you, everybody. Appreciate it.
Thank you, staff. Thank you. Have a good day.